Radical love, lavish generosity, extravagant forgiveness, inclusive hospitality, compassionate action, selfless service, a passion for justice, creative nonviolence, simple living. Good day, good people. I'm Robert Farrell. This is Coalesce. Thank you for joining me. Coalesce is grounded in both and thinking, heart wisdom, and listening for the common good arising in dialogue, where we are present to presence. Coalesce provides an opportunity to encounter and discover the multiple perspectives that make our beautiful community. May we see with the eyes of our heart. May we love one another with peace and compassion. May all beings come to know the divine presence within. This is episode 37, Our Life is the Path. This week I'd like to share with you six brief reflections and then the practice. The reflections will be unit of consciousness, being peace, interbeing, mindfulness, impermanence, and non-self. And we'll begin with a reflection on a change in consciousness. Rather than making dogmatic statements about how to get to heaven, Jesus modeled and taught how to live on earth in a loving way, and he said that this was indeed heaven. But Christians have all too often pushed heaven into the future. We've made Jesus' death and resurrection into a reward-punishment system for the next world, which creates tremendously self-absorbed and self-preoccupied people. It doesn't transform anyone into compassionate, loving individuals. Instead, it leads to a kind of morbid self-analysis in which people feel guilty, inferior, and inadequate, or superior and self-righteous. This dualistic approach has corrupted the true meaning of the gospel. Theologian Jorgen Moltmann said that to say, "I accept Jesus Christ as my Savior," diminishes the gospel into an introverted and self-centered individualism. I would go so far as to say that by sending Christians on a path of well-disguised but delayed self-interest, we prostituted the entire spiritual journey from the very start. You cannot easily get to love when you begin with threats and appeals to fear. The driving energy is completely wrong. Rather, you come to love by attraction. Change must begin with positive energy, or the final result is never positive. Maybe one of the reasons the Buddha didn't talk about God was because he didn't want his teachings to be interpreted as a method of earning or losing God's love. He emphasized awareness and experience more than winning a prize. Words, which are by nature dualistic, tend to get in the way of actual experience. Thomas Merton said, "Buddhist meditation, but above all that of Zen, seeks not to explain, but to pay attention, to become aware, to be mindful, in other words, to develop a certain kind of consciousness that is above and beyond deception by verbal formulas or by emotional excitement." Both the Buddha and Jesus were constantly telling people to be compassionate, to let go, to detach. The difference is that Buddhists were taught that they could not do any of these with a dualistic consciousness. If you were raised Christian, on the other hand, you were given the impression that you could be a forgiving person with a dualistic mind. You can't. In effect, Christians were given commandments about mercy, compassion, loving enemies, and forgiveness without being taught the non-dual consciousness necessary for living most of those commandments. Because the church usually did not engage any actual change of consciousness, most people had to split. In effect, we became hypocrites. By the way, the word first meant actors. We had no other choice. We have to pretend that we love our enemies because Jesus said we should. We have to pretend to be nonviolent when in reality, Americans are all part of a highly militaristic culture. But the real teaching of Jesus is ignored. is innocuous and is boring to us, because frankly, with a dualistic mind, most of it is unlivable and impossible. You can give people all the pious Christian teaching you want, but without a transformation of consciousness, they don't have the energy or the capacity to carry it out. Thankfully, we are now in an age where we can be open to learning from other world religions like Buddhism, which have long been teaching the non-dual consciousness that Christianity stopped teaching in a systematic way for at least the last 500 years. A reflection on unitive consciousness. Theologian Paul Nitter wrote an insightful book called Without Buddha, I Could Not Be a Christian. In it, he explains that Buddhism teaches practices that will help Christians draw on the mystical contents of our faith. Buddhism can help Christians to be mystical Christians, to realize and enter into the non-dualistic or unitive heart of the Christian experience, a way to be one with the Father, to live Christ's life, to not just be a container of the Spirit, but an embodiment and expression of the Spirit, to live by and with and in the Spirit, to live and move and have our being in God. Like the Christian contemplative practices we've explored this year, Buddhist practices such as meditation, silence, and living mindfully help us encounter the deepest, truest reality, our oneness with God. True, what Christians are after is different than what Buddhists are after. For Christians, it's identification with the Christ Spirit. For Buddhists, it's realizing their Buddha nature. And yet, both of these very different experiences have something in common. They are unitive, non-dualistic, mystical experiences in which we find that our own identity is somehow joined with that which is both more than and at the same time one with our identity. This is what the Buddhist practices are so good at, achieving such unitive experiences in which the self is so transformed that it finds itself through losing itself. Theologian Ramon Panikkar describes true non-duality this way: the interrelating partners are not two, but neither are they one. Can Christians say something similar about the relationship between God and creation? Romano Guardini says that it's a principle of logic that A cannot be B at the same time and in the same respect that it's A. Likewise, God is the creator and we are the creature. And yet Guardini adds, although I am not God, I am not other than God either. He says the direct intuitive realization that although I am not God, I am not other than God either, fans out in all directions. Although I am not you, I am not other than you either. Although I am not the earth, I am not other than the earth either. As this soaks into me, what are the implications of this in the way I act in the world, in relationships with other people? Thomas Merton realized that people of different religions were not other than me, and how I treat them, I'm treating myself. And as Jesus says, I'm treating Jesus. That's the social consciousness dimension of contemplation. Let us take this moment to connect with the direct intuitive realization that although you are not God, you are not other than God either. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. A reflection being peace. Engaged Buddhism, a term coined by Thich Nhat Hanh, brings insights from Buddhist practice and teaching to social, political, environmental, and economic injustice. Buddhists are much more concerned about waking up to our innate wisdom and compassion, our Buddha nature, than they are about working for justice. If Christians insist that if you want peace, work for justice, the Buddhist would counter-insist, if you want peace, be peace. That's the point that Thich Nhat Hanh gently drives home in the little book titled Being Peace. His message is as simple and straightforward as it is sharp and upsetting. The only way we are going to be able to create peace in the world is if we first create, or better, find peace in our hearts. Being peace is an absolute prerequisite for making peace. And by being peace, Thich Nhat Hanh means deepening the practice of mindfulness, both formally in regular meditation, as well as throughout the day as we receive every person and every event that enters our lives. Through such mindfulness, we will more and more be able to understand whomever we meet or whatever we feel, and so respond with compassion. Only with the peace that comes with such mindfulness will we be able to respond in a way that brings forth peace for the event or person or feeling that we are dealing with. The Buddhist insistence on the necessary link between being peace and making peace reflects Christian spirituality's traditional insistence that all our action in the world must be combined with contemplation. But the Buddhists are very clear, while both are essential, one holds a priority of practice. If action and contemplation form a constantly moving circle in which one feeds into the other, I believe the entrance point can be action or contemplation. Frankly, I believe most people act, love, and make mistakes before they see the deep need for contemplation. Yet only when we are resting in our deep center, our source, the indwelling spirit in whom we live and move and have our being, only then can we be of service to others over the long haul and with love. Why? Why? Just why do Buddhists insist on the priority of awakening over acting? Why do they want to just sit there before they do anything? Certainly, there are different ways a Buddhist might answer this question. But I believe that one of the recurring responses would be to remove one's ego from one's peacemaking, so that one's actions will not be coming from one's ego needs, but from the wisdom and compassion that constitutes one's true nature. When Richard Rohr first founded the Center for Action and Contemplation over 30 years ago, he envisioned spending about half their time teaching contemplation and half teaching social justice. Many for the same reasons that have already been said, as well as the fact that Western people are already geared toward action, but need training in stillness and silence. So now, the Center for Action and Contemplation spends 80% of their effort teaching contemplation, knowing that if the inner world is authentic, an individual's political, economic, and service attitudes will always change organically from the inside out. A reflection interbeing. Richard Rohr loves to tell the story how in 1985, while walking on the path, he met a recluse. And the recluse said, "Richard, you get to talk to people. Please tell them one thing, God is not out there." And he pointed to the sky. Then he said, "Thank you," and walked on. There is a Western overemphasis on God as a transcendent other who is out there. Somewhere, as the crux of the problem, Christian dualism has so exaggerated the difference between God and the world that it cannot really show how the two form a unity. If there is in Christian tradition and experience a God within, a God who lives and moves and has being within us and the world, we need help in finding such a God. Buddhism, I believe, can provide some help. As Christians seek God, Buddhists seek awakening to the way things are, the way they work. Although Buddhists emphasize that enlightenment is beyond words, they use the term sunyata to touch on what the awakening means. The Mahayana tradition of Buddhism describes sunyata as emptiness, in the sense of being able and open to receive anything. Zen Buddhists speak of emptiness as the Buddha nature that inheres all sentient beings. Thich Nhat Hanh translates sunyata as interbeing. Pema Chodron, a Buddhist nun who teaches in the tradition of the Tibetan Buddhism, refers to sunyata as groundlessness, since everything is moving in interdependence with everything else. Sounds like the incarnate mystery of Trinity to me. If we Christians really affirm that God is love and that Trinity means relationality, then I think the symbol Buddhists use for sunyata, interbeing, is entirely fitting for our God. God is the field, the dynamic energy field of interbeing within which, as we read in the New Testament, but perhaps never really heard, we live and move and have our being. See Acts 17:28. Or from the divine perspective, there is one God above all things, through all things, and in all things. See Ephesians 4:6. This presence above, through, and in can fittingly and engagingly be imagined as an energy field which pervades and influences us all, calling us to relationships of knowing and loving each other, energizing us when such relationships get rough, filling us with the deepest of happiness when we are emptying ourselves and finding ourselves in others. This is what I like to call the spirit as a force field. We are inextricably linked to God. Without the spirit, the body cannot live. Without the body, the spirit cannot act. The same is true of spirit and creation. Thinking about or imagining God as interbeing and relating to God as the connecting spirit is a major antidote to the dualism that has infected Christian theology and spirituality. With God as the connecting spirit, the creator cannot be totally other to creation. Here I think I'm getting closer to what Thomas Aquinas was trying to express when he described the relationship between God and the world as one of participation. Therefore, a better image for creation might be a pouring forth of God, an extension of God, in which the divine carries on the divine activity of interrelating in and with and through creation. Clearly, then, God is not just out there. Let us take this moment to connect with the divine activity of interrelating in and with and through creation. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. A reflection, mindfulness. We'll start with a short poem by Thich Nhat Hanh. Waking up this morning, I smile. 24 brand new hours are before me. I vow to live fully in each moment and to look at all beings with eyes of compassion. Designation, the word Buddha, comes from the root of the verb bud, which means to wake up, to understand, to know what is happening in a very deep way. In knowing, understanding, and waking up to reality, there is mindfulness, because mindfulness means seeing and knowing what is happening. The Buddhist Pema Chodron talks about groundlessness, and the Christian theologian Karl Rahner's has an emphasis on mystery, but these are just two different fingers pointing to the same moon. For both of them to feel the reality of mystery, or sunyata, means to let go of self, to trust totally in what both of them call infinite openness. Openness to what? To what is, to what's going on right now, in the trust that what is going on is what I am a part of and what will sustain and lead me moment by moment, only moment by moment. There are no grand visions promised here, just a mindful trusting of each moment as it comes with what it contains, with its confusion or inspiration, with its joy or horror, with its hope or despair. Whatever is there, this suchness right now, is the breath of the spirit, the power of mystery, the connectedness of emptiness, the suchness of each moment is the infinite mercy of God. So Pema Chodron teaches three graces of mindfulness practice: precision, gentleness, and letting go. Once we can honestly acknowledge whatever is going on in the moment with clarity and acceptance, we can let our unmet expectations go. This allows us to live more freely and vibrantly, fully awake to presence. If we can truly be mindful of what is going on in us and around us, that's how we can find or feel the spirit in it. Then our response to the situation will be originating from the spirit rather than from our knee-jerk feelings of fear or anger or envy. And whether the response is to endure bravely or to act creatively, it will be done with understanding and compassion, which means it will be life-giving or life-creating. I hope these reflections invite you to go deeper, beyond words and ideas about mindfulness, to actual practice and experience. When you stay with your practice, eventually you will realize, as Thich Nhat Hanh writes, that our life is the path, and we no longer rely merely on the forms of practice. I hope you are seeing that Christianity and Buddhism are not in competition with one another. Christians are usually talking about metaphysics, what is, and Buddhists are usually talking about epistemology, how do you know what is? The touch points of the teaching of Buddhism are impermanence, non-self, and nirvana. Any teaching that does not bear these three touch points cannot be said to be a teaching of the Buddha. Let's explore each of these briefly. Impermanence is what makes transformation possible. We should learn to say, live long impermanence. Thanks to impermanence, we can change suffering into joy. What makes us suffer is clinging to or craving things that are passing away, or trying to avoid things that are unavoidable, aversion. The Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths as a middle way between craving and aversion, between indulgence and asceticism. Flowing from impermanence, we see that it is futile to cling to even our assumed identity or our perceptions of reality. For Buddhists, the most basic fact or quality of the world is not being, as it is for most Western philosophers and theologians. It's becoming. Everything changes because everything is interrelated. The second touch point is non-self, which affirms the Buddhist understanding that nothing has a separate existence or a separate self. Everything has to interbe with everything else. The importance of the first two touch points are that the teachings of impermanence and non-self were offered by the Buddhas as keys to unlock the door of reality. We have to train ourselves to look in a way that we know we can touch one thing, we can touch everything. We have to see that the one is in the all and the all is in the one. We touch not only the phenomenal aspects of reality, but the ground of being. Things are impermanent without self. They have to undergo birth and death. But if we touch them very deeply, we touch the ground of being that is free from birth and death, free from permanence and impermanence, self and non-self. The third touch point is nirvana, which is the freedom, the ground of being. Thich Nhat Hanh uses a wonderful illustration to describe this mystery. A wave does not have to die in order to become water. Water is the substance of the wave. The wave is already water. We are also like that. We carry in us the ground of interbeing, nirvana, the world of no birth and no death, no permanence and no impermanence, no self and no non-self. Nirvana is the complete silencing of concepts. The notions of impermanence and non-self were offered by the Buddha as instruments of practice, not as doctrines to worship, fight, or die for. My dear friends, the Buddha said, the touchstones of teaching I offer you is only a raft to help you cross over to the other shore. The raft is not to be held onto as an object of worship. It is an instrument for crossing over to the shore of well-being. If you know how to use the tools of impermanence and non-self to touch reality, you touch nirvana in the here and the now. Let us take this moment to use the tools of impermanence and non-self to touch reality. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. The practice this week is titled The Four Limitless Qualities. Buddhism identifies four limitless qualities: loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Loving kindness and compassion may appear to be the same, but there are subtle differences. In Buddhism, compassion includes a willingness to identify so fully with someone that you would be willing to carry a little of their suffering. Equanimity may be close to what Christians mean by peace. These four qualities are limitless in that they increase with practice and use. If you don't choose daily and deliberately to practice loving kindness, it's unlikely that a year from now you will be any more loving. The qualities are also limitless because they are already within you, which beautifully parallels the Christian theology of the Holy Spirit. There is a place in you that is already kind, compassionate, joyful, and equanimous. Last week's practice, Tonglen, focused on holding the suffering of self and others. Today I'll paraphrase Pema Chodron's practice for loving kindness. You're invited to set aside a quiet period to go through these simple steps with intention and openness. So as you sit quietly, recognize the place of loving kindness inside you. It is there. Honor it, awaken it, and actively draw upon it. Drawing upon the source of loving kindness within you, Bring to mind someone for whom you feel sincere goodwill and tenderness, someone you love very much. From your source, send loving kindness toward this person and bless them. Awaken loving kindness for someone who is a casual friend or associate, someone not in your inner circle, but a bit further removed, someone you admire or appreciate. Send love to that individual. Now send loving kindness to someone about whom you feel neutral or indifferent. For example, a gas station attendant or a cashier. Send your blessing to this person. Now think of someone who has hurt you, who has talked evil of you, whom you find it difficult to like, or you don't enjoy being around. Bless them. Send this would-be enemy your love. Bring all of the first five individuals into the stream of flowing love, including yourself. Hold them here for a few moments. Finally, extend this love to embrace all beings in the universe. It is one piece of love, one love toward all, regardless of religion, race, culture, or likability. You're invited to leave plenty of space between each of these seven steps when you do this practice in your own home. I've read them quickly just for the sake of presenting them. This practice can help you know in your mind, heart, and body that love is not determined by the worthiness of the object. Love is determined by the giver of the love. These steps can be repeated for the other three limitless qualities. Remember, spiritual gifts increase with use. Love, compassion, joy, and equanimity will grow as you let them flow. You are simply an instrument, a conduit for the inflow and outflow of the gifts of the Spirit. You are interbeing. Thank you for being with me. I hope as the week progresses, you become more and more connected to the interbeing that your life is the path. Blessings to all.